This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wyman and Bob is presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. Friday edition of the program. We got the Pete Carroll exclusive conversation with Steve Rabel coming up at 3 o'clock. John Clayton at 4 o'clock. Our player spotlight will feature Tyler Ott at 5 o'clock. So we've done the special teams kicking trifecta. We've had the kicker, the punter, and now the long snapper.
Right down the middle. You can kick a field goal with those three.
That's exactly right.
You got the snap.
We got
the holder.
We got the three most important people in that whole scenario. So that's at 5 o'clock. And then mean text today, of course, it being Friday. You guys can text in the mean things you say to us throughout the week. Just be creative. That's all we ask.
Yeah, just a little note. It's Lefko's birthday tomorrow. So if you really want to hit him hard.
You want him to just lean on him?
Yeah, I do.
No mercy.
You guys are Jelly Bean Brothers, man. What's that about? I thought there was a bond created in
They're
your
jelly language. Bellies, Bob.
I loved how excited he was getting over the
new flavors.
They got this, Dave. Look, Krispy Kreme flavor. Oh, Dave, look, champagne. He's very excited about the. I bought him some a big thing of jelly beans from Costco and a big package of string cheese for his birthday.
It's the way to his heart,
right? Those are the things he loves.
The thing that I have for him is also food related.
Yeah,
so.
And then we bought donuts this morning, too. The other shows circled around and attacked like buzzards. But, yeah, he had donuts, and now he's got the Jelly Bellies, and he's very excited about the new flavors.
And well, there are donut-flavored Jelly Bellies. So that combines the best of both worlds.
And I asked if him being the lover of cheese that he is, about a string cheese-flavored jelly bean. He wasn't in on that.
One that's covered in wax.
he's a fan of wax.
We were out at Edgar's, and the guy comes up to me. Hey, which one's the dude that ate the wax cheese? Like, he's right over there.
There he is.
And you would think that Lefko would be like 295 pounds.
No. Nope.
No.
He's svelte.
He's svelte.
I could be. They don't know that. This is the radio.
I don't think you could ever do that. You couldn't eat more than you eat now.
No.
And it's not working. So
it's not working.
No chance.
All right. So if you guys want to take shots at Lefko, feel free to do that in honor of his birthday, or you take shots at myself and Dave. Whatever you want to do. 206-421-3776. That's 421 ESPN. It's powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. All right. So what do we expect out of this defense, Dave, going into this game? We've done a lot of talking about this defense, and there was a cut I heard from Jordan Brooks yesterday. And it was sort of echoed by Bobby Wagner. I want to play these cuts and just get your reaction because I've got questions.
I've got questions
about this at this level.
It's the biggest shock in radio history. Bob has questions.
The highest level of football, Dave. How is this a thing? Here's Jordan Brooks on the huddle yesterday talking about working on the communication.
I think the thing that we've been doing is communicating. That was an issue in the first couple of games, just guys kind of just, you know, we just weren't communicating. Nobody's on the same page. And so can't expect to be a great defense if you can't play as one. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we've been working on in practice during walkthroughs all day, you know, communicating and talking to one another. Safety's talking to LBs, LBs talking to the D-line. We all on the same page. And I think it kind of came together for us in the second half of the Pittsburgh game.
Okay, so there's Jordan Brooks, and then one more here, and then we'll I want to get you to weigh in on what Jamal Adams also talked about. But here's Bobby Wagner saying they've started talking more.
I think it was a combination of everything. I think there was definitely, you know, some changes that we made and definitely more awareness to over-communicate on a lot of our behalfs. And I think, you know, it all matched up with that moment. You know, we had some big moments in that game. And, you know, in order for us to make those plays, we have to be, you know, on the same page and communicate. So I think it was a step in the right direction, but you know, it has to become consistent, and you know, I think there's still areas to improve with it.
And then one more, I lied. Just keeping this theme going, Jamal Adams saying the communication is getting better.
Yeah, it's been getting better. You know what I mean? Each and every week. Obviously, we want to continue to do that. Communication, you know, is a very, very, very big thing for us. You know, on the defensive side, especially you know at home dealing with the crowd noise. You know, so as long as we communicate and as we stay on the same page and not give up explosive plays, we'll be fine.
Dave, how is communication such a problem six games into the season? How do we hear two different guys say, yeah, we weren't all on the same page? What, how is that possible? You spend a week going through a game plan for that one opponent, and you're that's all you focus on. And then it becomes a problem. I understand that. Communicate, somebody doesn't do what they're supposed to do. You look at it the next week. Hey, Bobby, you did this. Hey, Jamal, you did this. We can't do that. All the basics that you talk to me about each and every day when it comes to playing defense at this level. And here we are headed into the seventh game of the season, and they're talking about, well, in the second half of the sixth game, we felt like the communication was starting to come together. Why would it possibly take that long for guys to get on the same page of a game plan?
Well, I'll tell you what. From 30,000 feet is the same thing I was saying about the offense. Maybe these guys could have used the preseason. You know, I mean, maybe that's what they need to do. But I'll just explain. So I'm confused too, Bob, and I'm not sure if that's really it. I think a lot of it, you know, the category things that just get said. I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to say, yeah, well, numbnuts over here didn't give me the call, and then I didn't know where I was going. And so, I mean, nobody's going to be throwing each other under the bus. You would assume that Bobby knows that defense inside and out, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been with Ken Norton for forever. So, you know, I think it would start with him. But, you know, I mean, the whole concept of linebackers talking to safeties and linebackers talking to D-line, that's not new.
Yeah,
I mean that's something that you have to do, and I always, you know, put it on the linebackers because they're in the middle. I mean, they do.
They're making the call, right?
Yeah, they're calling the huddle typically, but also, you know, they're involved in the front and the run gaps much more than the defensive backs are, and then they're involved in the coverage just as much as the defensive backs are. So, yeah, it typically falls on, and then two of the three that you heard from there were linebackers. So, yeah, it's interesting. I always go back to the way we would install a defense. It was, you know, you would chalk it, talk it, and walk it. So you would go up on the board, put it up, and then you would talk about it and, you know, what is this and what is that? And then you would go outside and then walk through it, and then you go out and practice it. And you're doing that all week. And so I don't really understand that part. I mean, you've got premier players, you've got guys that are really smart football players, and yet they just aren't communicating. I just wonder if that's just like, hey, you know, maybe it was on this play, this guy didn't do his job, and that screwed the whole thing up, and nobody wants to point fingers at somebody else. But yeah, it's just, but outside of that, yeah, like I said, I was like, maybe they need to go through the preseason. Maybe that would have helped having three more games under their belts. Now, they're not going to all the starters play in every single one, but at least, you know, get your feet wet a little bit. So
how much would that help? Because we always talk about how in preseason, offensively, defensively, it's as vanilla and bland as it gets. You're not unveiling everything you're going to do. This isn't our offense. We're just doing the bare minimum. We're getting some reps. So how much would they learn? How much would that actually help in terms of developing a rhythm if you're not running the defense you would otherwise be running in the regular season?
The communication part of it.
That just,
yeah.
Even though you're not making the moves or whatever you'd normally make,
yeah.
Just still saying, hey, you need to be here, I need to be here.
Yeah.
Just that conversation.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's just weird to me. I never, you know, I feel like I never had a communication problem with people. And, you know, that was never the problem. It was that, hey, yeah, we know what the rules are, you know. And so this is something I'll go back to that, you know, you put these defenses in and you have rules, and the rules should make sense. But what you want is the fewest exceptions, you know, is what my coach used to call the what ifs. So, okay, what if they line up in this? What if they line up in that? What if, you know, and, you know, typically you would have the answer. But if there was like, okay, well, in this case, we're going to, you know, ditch the rule and say we have to memorize this. Mm-hmm. And then if there's another one, and then, you know, typically, and I confirmed this with Babineau, and we're from different generations, but he said, yeah, if you get to a point, and it's just like how we did it, there's too many exceptions, pitch the defense. It's not worth it. It's not worth putting a defense in that you have to think that much. You can't think on defense. It has to be instinct. So the other thing I would say is like, maybe the crowd should be quiet during defense. I mean, maybe, you know how offense, they're
that'll
always,
be a tough switch.
Yeah, I mean, if they're having a hard time communicating, because, you know, like I've always said, in the kingdom, you could be standing right next to somebody and screaming, and there's no way you're going to hear them. There's just no way. So, yeah, we had to have hand signals and things like that. But it's a good payoff because you get the adrenaline from the crowd and everything. But I don't know. Maybe for this team, it's different. I just think it's one of those things that gets said. To me, if you ask me what I see guys playing hunches. You know, I see guys jumping things and thinking that they're going to get an interception and kind of playing outside of the rules. Mm-hmm. So that to me is what, in good example, you know, both linebackers jumping a 5-yard route on 2nd and 17. So, you know, and then they sail a ball right over your head and it's a first down. So, I mean, those are the kinds of things. But, I mean, again, they're not going to start calling each other out. I would just say, though, that I'm happy that we can lean our hat on the fact that they got a little bit better. They got a little bit better last week against Pittsburgh. There was definitely some communication. Saw a little bit more attack in the line of scrimmage. And so that part is starting to get better.
I wonder if there are too many exceptions currently. I mean, you just said it. Bobby's been with Ken Norton forever. This is not a new defense. This would make more sense if we were talking about the offense. Hey, they're not communicating. They, you know, one guy's on this page, this guy's on this page. You're like, well, that's kind of what you'd expect with A, they didn't play in the preseason. B, you've got a brand new play caller in there, a new offense. Yeah. You might expect some of those growing pains or some of those moments where, you know, one guy's running one way and he should be going the other way and the other guy's pointing going, what are you doing? That would make sense. Doesn't make it great. You don't love to see it, but at least you go, well, I get it. I don't get it on defense. I just don't. I don't understand. It's not a new defense. There's very little change in what they do or the terminology. Yeah, there are different wrinkles, and, boy, they're very guarded about that. Who was it I asked about it? Puna? When I said, hey, just a general question of any new wrinkles, anything really change or pretty much the same? And he's like, I can't tell you.
Like, yeah, I got the same thing from Carlos Dunlap.
Yeah,
when I asked him about, you know, the guy dropping back, the lineman, I mean, it was clear as day.
Yeah.
It was Alton Robinson dropping back and running with an out and up.
Yeah. Like,
that was a freaky thing to see, a defensive end. And, you know, when I asked him about it, he's like, yeah, I'm not trying to be that guy, or I don't want to give that away. I want to give our secrets away.
I don't think it's a secret.
Yeah.
And well, it's, and by the way, it's not working. So I don't think anybody's, you know, dying to hear the secret. But, you know, just overall, same coordinator, same philosophy, same defense. A lot of the same players. I mean,
leader.
Yeah, same leader and Bobby Wagner and all, you know, the majority of these guys were all here last year. So that's where this doesn't make any sense to me. Just hearing about all these issues with communication and one after another saying, you know, oh boy, everybody was just kind of on a different page. I'm like, how is that even possible? Especially now headed into the 7th game. This isn't game 2. This isn't game 1, even game 3. Okay, you're not on the same page. Let's get that figured out. You got a week to figure it out. Before the next opponent. Oh, it happened again. All right, we got a whole week again before the next opponent. Oh, it happened again. All right, we'll take this entire week. It doesn't compute for me. It's for guys that have that level of experience and familiarity with that defense, it doesn't wash. I don't know. And I think maybe it is what you said. It's just a way of not throwing anybody under the bus and just saying, hey, you know, we had some breakdowns out there. We're going to get it fixed. Whatever. Just throwing out, you know, just little general statements.
Right. Yeah, I think that's probably part of it. But I would say this, you know, the more I think about it, the more, and if you weren't listening yesterday, or maybe we even brought it up the day before, but the more I think about it, the more I think it's going to start to bother these guys. That graphic on Sunday night was pretty harsh. And did they deserve it? Oh, you could say, I mean, if you're mad at the defense and everything, you could say they deserve it. But again, in case you didn't hear, Legion of Boom graphic with Cam, Earl, and Richard Sherman, and talked about their, you know, 4 years in a row being the scoring champs in the NFL, which is NFL history, 4 years in a row doing that. What was it, 12 through 15?
Yeah, 12, 13, 14, and 15, I believe.
Or maybe it was 13, 14, 15, 16. Anyway, either way, they had that. Then they dropped the M off of the boom, and it says boo, and now there's Bobby and Quandre and Jamal standing there. And
kind of clever.
It was kind of clever, but like the more I think about it, I was like, man, if I'm those guys, I'm not going to be too thrilled with NBC and the next time they want to try to get an interview or something like that. Like, yeah. I said, it was pretty harsh, man. But also, that's the kind of thing that puts a chip on your shoulder. Now, you know, you're going on Monday Night Football, you know, another big stage. So you go from Thursday night to Sunday night to Monday night, you know, and it's at home. They haven't won a game. since last year in the regular season. I guess it was the last regular season game against the Rams.
Rams, right? I looked at it. It was like November of last year. Or
was it November?
October?
I thought it was later. Well, it was. I think it was their second or third to last game. So I'm pretty sure it was in December. But yeah, and you know, you have to go back to 2019 for the 100-yard rusher. That's the one I was thinking of. But anyway, as far as winning at home, and remember in 2019 when everybody was in the building, they're 4-4 at home, 7-1 on the road, and then last year with nobody in the building, they go 7-1 at home. So now, right now, they're 0-2. So you know. I think it's time to for this these guys to – I think they're going to have a big, heavy chip on their shoulder, and they're going to want to, you know, really get this down. But, I mean
– You're right, December 27th against the Rams at home.
Okay.
So, that was the last home win.
Well, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
So, either way –
Almost a year.
Yeah, either way you look at it. Yeah, I was thinking of 2019 because, remember, they lost the last two home games, which were Arizona and San Francisco at home. So, yeah, that was that was the year they were 4-4. Good
boy.
Proud.
They lost 3 of 4 to close out that season. Lost to the Rams, beat Carolina, lost to Arizona, lost to San Francisco.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And the loss to San Francisco, they would have been NFC West champs. So it's something about, you know, these guys getting it together and everything, but I just don't believe that it's just that. Because like you said, Bob, and you've been saying this, and I totally agree with you. Why is it we finally fixed this communication? Why wasn't that getting done before? You know, yeah. So I think it's just something that they're saying. I don't know what the reason is, but I think you can see that Jamal Adams is not playing the way he did last year. He's not having the same impact. Why is that? Do you think he's a worse player? Text it in, 710. No, not 710 anymore. 206-421 ESPN, 3776. Because to me, Jamal Adams has not lost any kind of a step. I don't see him not hustling. I don't see him not playing hard because he got paid. I think it's because he's confused and they're playing a different kind of defense. Carlos Dunlap, same thing. We beat that to death all week. Why hasn't he gotten more? I mean, after 6 games, he had 5 sacks here last year. 6 games this year, he doesn't have a sack. And I think he has a couple quarterback hits, but you know, why isn't he having an impact? So it's very strange. Not sure exactly what's going on, but I feel like it's going to get fixed. And then they're going to say, see, I told you. I'm like, well.
Yeah, it only took 7 weeks.
Well,
that's great.
I mean, but I do think they have enough talent. I think they have the talent to do it. I think they have the right guys. There's a few guys on this defense that I really like. I like the way they play. I like the way Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, Brooks, I like the way they play. Puna, Al Woods, I mean, those guys, it's good stuff, man. I think that they're conscientious, good guys that are working their tails off. And, you know, there's just a few guys on every play that are screwing it up. Except for, you know, some of the stuffs that they've had, and they've had some good plays. They've picked off a couple passes. So, you know, on those plays, I guess they're all working together. But it's interesting, and I do think that they probably are this is just a product of, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to start throwing guys under the bus? No.
You guys can text in to the text line 206-421-3776. That's 421 ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Seahawks win if. Fill in that blank. And again, you can save us the hilarity of if they score more points.
Hilarity.
Yeah. Yeah. We can go ahead and just slide on right by that one, which is always just a gem.
So clever.
He's so good. So good. We get a good belly laugh out of it every time. But honestly, in your opinion, the Seahawks win if, and I'm going to go to what you've been saying and just keep it simple on defense. If everybody is where they're supposed to be, I don't think anybody needs to be a superhero. I don't think, you know, and Lefko's got some ideas here, like if Jamal Adams records a couple of sacks, if the DBs pick off a pass or two. Yeah, all of that certainly goes a long way into helping him win. But I think at this point, if everybody does their job, I'm gonna follow their lead. They're giving us these simple general answers as to what the problems are. Okay, well, here's a simple general expectation: do your job. If the guys on defense just do their job and play in the spot they are supposed to play, not try to do anybody else's job. If you're supposed to be in the A gap, then you stay there. If you're supposed to be in zone coverage, then you stay there. Your man card, you stay there. You just worry about you. And if they do that, I think they could pull this one out. If they don't, they're going to get worked.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the birthday boys selection, except not pass or two passes. Pick off Jameis Winston. You know, I saw he's only thrown three interceptions. I think I really do believe that Sean Payton is modeling him into a responsible quarterback that can, you know, operate. But I just saw one of the interceptions he threw in the Washington football team. I mentioned this yesterday. I wish I had been playing linebacker on that play. Threw it right to him. But, yeah, I think that's going to be – remember, Jameis Winston's only 27.
I know. Feels like he's been around forever.
I know. And that year he threw 30 interceptions. He's one of the few quarterbacks that have thrown for 5,000 yards, and he did.
Did they count the return yards on the interceptions as part of that?
They should take that away from his yardage, yeah.
Seriously.
But, yeah, I think if you pick him off a couple of times, it might send him into a tailspin. But I just think all the what-ifs and – you know, when if, it's got to fall on the defensive side of the ball still. You know, I've been, and we'll get into it later, I've been very pleased. The more I think about it, the more I think about Geno Smith and, you know, the job that he's done, 72%. Here's another thing. They had three penalties on offense last week. Mm-hmm. You know, there was one delay game. There was an offsides, which was on the offensive lineman. And then there was a holding penalty, but there was none of the buffoonery that comes along with somebody not knowing the offense. So, been impressed with him. I'm going defense.
All right, let's take two.
We have some Mariners roster moves today. The M's outrighted five players to AAA Tacoma, and LJ Newsom was claimed off waivers by the Cardinals. So, Shed Long, Darren McCacken, and Ryan Weber, three of those guys, they were on the 40-man roster. So it's currently at 37. Ooh, some room to add players.
Well, they better make room because they need to add some players. And I think Shed Long and who was the other player? Two guys rejected the
Ryan Weber was the other one.
Yeah. So they're free agents
yes.
now.
Mm.
Yeah. So there you go. Shed Long is no longer part of the proceedings along with Weber. So, yeah, I would imagine they got the Rule 5 situation coming up where you've got to protect players. So it's going to be interesting to see the moves they make with this roster. But, yes, they need room because I'm anticipating a lot of new blood.
Yeah. Well, and Shed Long, it's too bad he didn't work out. I mean, he's the one guy. We were talking about Darren McCacken today, who's the guy that came in the Colorado game. And, I mean, he was just fresh off the street or something. But Shed Long was a guy that you kind of pulled for. He's a, you know, interesting guy that you want to have on your team. But it just didn't seem to work out for him.
Had the Rays Grand Slam. Grand Slam against the Rays. One of the single biggest moments of the season. All these guys had their nice moments this year.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. Well, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman is in town for the Venues Now conference and presumably also the Kraken opener tomorrow. And he said today that Seattle is now on the radar for an NHL outdoor game.
Wow.
That the team would play, where do they have designated spots, or is it a new spot every year?
No, they try to rotate it around. So
they've had it at Wrigley Field, right?
Yeah, they do something called the Winter Classic on New Year's, and then they started capitalizing on all the attention by doing something called the Stadium Series. So then they also play like two more outdoor games every year. So there's about three outdoor games every year.
Okay.
So everyone's assuming.
But it's not the
T-Mobile.
Same four
stadiums. No. They try to rotate it and go all over the country.
So where would it be here?
Well, everyone's assuming T-Mobile, but some people have said, oh, maybe at the University of Washington. Because they did play one at the Big House. The Red Wings and Maple Leafs played at the University of Michigan's football stadium.
Mm.
So it could be at UW, right on the lake. That'd be a great setting.
Right on the lake, yeah. That is a beautiful setting over there. All the people pulling up in their boats.
That'd be pretty cool. All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberknifeProstate. It seems like a simple answer, but does Trey Brown have to start on Monday? Talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This is our guy, Jeff.
Love you, Jeff.
Little walking papers there.
He's my navigator.
Yeah, it was funny because you said you appreciated his calmness.
Yeah.
And I sent him a text. I said, the reviews are in. Dave and Shannon, big fan of you. And Dave appreciated your calmness while we were trying to park. And he goes, that's the first person that's ever described me as calm.
Well, he's got mayhem on his mind.
Yes, right. That's exactly right. Coming up at the top of the hour, our exclusive conversation between Pete Carroll and Steve Rabel. Stick around for that. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. So is it a must that Trey Brown plays? Here's a Here's Pete talking about Trey Brown and what to expect this weekend with not giving very specific details.
Well, Trey's going to get a lot of reps with Sidney, being a little slowed down. And I feel very comfortable about him playing. And so he's going to play in the game for sure.
So he's going to play. But well, should he just be – I was asking you before the show. I'm like, well, what – in all honesty, and this is not a shot at Sidney Jones, but really how much difference would there be? It's not like Sidney has come in here and cured all their problems and been just a revelation from Trey Flowers. He's been much of the same, if we're being honest. And I know people love him because he wore a Husky uniform, but let's call it like we see it. It has not been great. And he's also now dealing with a concussion situation. So I think I'd be surprised if Trey Brown is not playing.
Starting,
I should say.
Yeah. Well, and he said he's going to play a lot.
Yeah, so we know he'll be there.
What does that mean? I mean, he could be playing special teams.
Yeah.
So I had somebody tell me or complain about two players, and it was Puna Ford and Ugo Amadi, and it was their rookie year. And I would throw in there also Marquise Blair, where I was like, why wasn't he playing more? Their rookie year, why weren't they playing more? And all three of those guys, because remember Puna, I mean, they talked him up right away. I mean, he was going to make the team and everything, and so
Justin Britt calling him a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, exactly. But and that was pretty early in his career, and I think it took a while to get him into the lineup. And you know, we'll talk about this maybe down the road here, but I feel like they kind of got away from playing the younger guys. But you can't say that about last year, right? Last year, pretty much everybody played except for Daryl Taylor. I mean, Steven Sullivan, who played for one game, basically, and he was the guy they took a shot on. Remember, they traded back in.
Was he the one that was a tight end? They were having him play defensive end?
And he played defensive end, and he was a kid that was homeless when he was growing up. Great story, everything. I think he went to Carolina, and I'm not sure if he's still there. But other than that, him and Taylor, everybody played. All the young guys got thrown into the fire, man. Freddie Swain, you know? So was DJ last year?
DJ Dallas was last year.
Yeah. So I always get him and Homer mixed up because Travis was the year before. But they got back to playing those young guys. I would just say this, and look, I watched the game pretty closely, and there was two plays that he made that I'm like, that's it. That's what you need. And one was when he ran the route for Claypool. He got on top of him and just basically shielded him away. Because he read it perfectly, and it was a route up the sidelines, and I think Roethlisberger just ended up throwing it away because he had that covered. And then the other one was the tackle on the sidelines.
Now, in overtime.
Yeah.
It was a great tackle.
It was just beautiful. And, you know, that guy is physical. He's going to hit you. And both of those guys will. DJ Reed, too. So I just feel like the Mighty Mites, the 5'9", 5'10 guys, let's roll with them. I'm sure Pete would have, you know,
What would be the argument against if you're going to go devil's advocate? Yeah. Because I don't see it.
Well, one thing would be he didn't practice well this week.
Okay. The unforeseen, things we can't see.
Yeah. And, you know, it's ultimately about trust, especially at that position. You've got to really trust him. This is maybe some people think this is hokey. I don't. The other reason why I would start him, his post-game interview, which I listened to.
That's the first time I've heard that.
Dude, he is a pro. This kid does not sound like a rookie. Remember when we interviewed him, too?
Yeah, he was a great interview. Yeah, but I don't know if that's why I would start him, but you know, his interviewing skills.
It wouldn't just be on the interview, Bob. No, but I mean, the way he played. Now, did he play with confidence?
Yes.
Okay, and then when he did his interview, he had confidence. This is a confident young man, and he has made big plays in big moments. He's the Big 12 guy. The guy against Iowa State, Baylor, Texas, he in those games, the Big 12 championship when he was at Oklahoma, he had a sack for a safety, and then I think he got a pick in that game against Texas, or it ended up leading to the game winner. Against Baylor, he made a game-saving tackle. It was like 75 yards downfield, and they end up holding him. And then against Iowa State, he ended up picking off a pass. So, and he made more plays than even that. They were joking about putting his statue outside of AT&T Stadium where they have the Big 12 championship every year because he has made so many plays in 3 years in a row. This kid can play. He's confident. I remember in college, you know, he lost his mom. I think it was before the TCU game. And then, you know, he went home for a few days, then met his teammates and played in that game. He's grown up. mature, confident guy. I don't see why you wouldn't start him, and I would love to see him start. And I think most texters, most people would say, yeah, definitely let's go right with Trey Brown. Because you kind of saw, you know, a similar thing with Sidney Jones, and I'm not trashing him. I thought he was better. But, I mean, Trey was...
We weren't setting the bar very high with you know, we love Trey Flowers as a guy. He was a great guy, man. I'm still rooting for him. I hope he has success.
Maybe he should go back to safety.
Yeah, he was just having a really rough go of it. So he's not setting the bar high in terms of, well, this is now an improvement. It was a real marginal improvement, in my opinion. And again, not a shot at Sidney. There was a reason it didn't work out for him in Philly. There was a reason that Jacksonville just figured they had no use for him. They just cut him. So, you know, you take a flyer on a guy, and I don't blame him at all for that. And I think maybe he fits in a rotation of some sort, but he's not so much better that I go, can you afford to put a rookie in there and lose what you're getting out of him? I'm like, what are you truly getting out of him? So, well, Trey will have mistakes. He'll make mistakes. He might get burned. He's a young guy, and if he's exposed for four quarters, that's a lot more opportunity for things to happen. Certainly good things can happen, but I'm not going to, you know, hold him to a standard of a veteran out there. This is his rookie year. He didn't even start the year. He's been injured. So, yeah, but knowing that, I'm still putting him out there because I just don't feel like the gap between the vet and the rookie is that substantial.
Yeah, well, you look at the difference between Trey Flowers and Sidney Jones. Marginal. But look at the difference between Trey Flowers and Trey Brown.
Yeah.
And the other thing you mentioned, mistakes, that was the one thing Pete did say about him was that you didn't say he made a whole bunch of plays during camp and everything, but he was like, you know, all the other guys made mistakes and errors and took missteps. None of that from Trey Brown. We didn't see any of that. So, yeah, I just think this is a mature kid that needs to start. And, look, maybe they put him in the second series, third series. I would just like to see him play the majority of the downs.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they do with him out there because he gave you a reason to be really hopeful and optimistic based on how he looked last week. All right, coming up, Mariners have their footprints all over this MLB postseason, and that's why it's kind of stinging right now. We'll talk more about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll let you hear from the head coach in our exclusive conversation. He talks to Steve Rabel. That happens every single Friday here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Stay tuned for that. Again, you guys can text in whenever you'd like, 206-421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We got Mean Text coming up at 5:45 today, so get creative. You got time. Enter those. The Mariners, as we said in the tease there, they've got footprints in this MLB postseason with former Mariners out there, and none more prominent, Dave, than the great Chris Taylor. The great. We all knew he was going to be a superstar, and we couldn't believe that the Mariners let him go. Never hit a home run in a Mariners uniform, by the way. Went 4-for-5 last night, 3 home runs, 6 runs driven in. And I've got friends, we've got mutual friends, that player in particular really bothers them, that he didn't do anything in the Seattle uniform and has gone on to some level of prominence. He's not a superstar, but he's had some huge moments for the Dodgers.
Well, never a home run with the Mariners.
Yeah.
Yeah, and instantly he went to the Dodgers and was hitting .288, I think his first year there. And then
some big postseason moments. I don't even think he's, like, average-wise tore it up in the postseason altogether, but he's just had these big moments.
Exactly. Yeah, and he's always one of those guys that are irritating. You know, by the way,
he's just always
just
irritating.
Not because nothing personal. Although, you know, like when you see his interviews, he's pretty bland. I was listening to him talk. It reminded me of Lofa Tatupu because, you know, whoever was interviewing him says, "Hey, were you thinking about a fourth home run? Your fourth at bat?" And he's like, "Yeah, you know, I couldn't lay off that changeup down and away." I'm like, he's lamenting the fourth home run that he didn't get.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of Lofa because he got 3 interceptions against Philadelphia. We brought it up to him, and he was like, yeah, I could have had 4. I mean, that's an athlete for you, right?
Yep.
But you know who I feel sorry for is A.J. Pollock. A.J. Pollock goes 3-for-5, scores 3 runs, 4 RBIs, hits two home runs, and he's not the star of the game.
Yeah, I saw him being debated this morning as to whether he should have swung 3-0. It was a 3-0 pitch that he knocked out of the park. They were already up. I can't remember what the score was. Maybe it was 8-2 at the time, something like that. And then he kind of posed at the plate and dropped the bat. And they're like, ah, do you do that in that situation? And, you know, it wasn't, hey, how great was he? It was, do you swing 3-0 when you're up by that many runs? Yeah, that was the conversation I heard this morning on MLB Network about Pollock. But are there any players, and this just got me thinking just because of, you know, the complaints about, man, the guy was nothing when he was with the Mariners and now he goes to the Dodgers. And listen, to be fair, he had a total of what? Let's see, 136, 94, 3. What, like 230-some at-bats with the Mariners in total in two seasons and then two games in the 2016 season. He only played two games. But, you know, he played 47 games in 14, 37 in 15, and just two in 16 before he was shipped off to the Dodgers. He didn't have a ton of time here. And, yeah, he didn't do much. Again, never hit a home run. Hit 287 the first year in 47 games and then hit 170 the next year with a 220 on base in 37 games. Is there anybody else that stands out for any franchise? Seahawks, Mariners, maybe back to the Sonics, the Storm, anybody in a Seattle franchise that did nothing here and then went on to some level of prominence elsewhere?
You know, it's funny. I remember Chris Taylor being worse as a Mariner. Then when I look at his numbers, I mean, you said he didn't hit a home run. He's light hitting at that time. But yeah. But I just remember him, I don't know, it was just kind of disappointing. And when I look at his numbers now, I was like, oh, actually, they weren't that bad. I mean, he was 287 in 47 games was his batting average his first year in 2014. But, but you know, I think the ones that come to mind is Adam Jones part of it. I mean, that's one that I think Mariner fans have held. And then
with him, they're more angry at the organization because they traded him in the Eric Bedard deal, and that was a disaster because Bedard was a turd,
yeah,
as a human and as a pitcher. Right. So, you know, you gave up somebody who was going to be a centerpiece of your future.
Well, and then, you know, if it's kind of a fair trade, like you got Marco Gonzalez, who was the guy in Philly,
Tyler O'Neill,
yeah, who's having a pretty good season, but yeah. you don't worry about that so much because he wasn't like on the scrap heap or anything like that. I mean, you traded and got Marco Gonzalez, but and then the other I would say it softens the blow with Alex Collins
because somebody brought that up.
Yeah, so I mean he goes to Baltimore and then, you know, he took quite a route there. He got in trouble off the field and it wasn't good, but you know, he only 125 yards with the Seahawks in 2016. And then he goes to Baltimore. And I remember that preseason. He just, every time he got the ball, like somebody would miss a block or the quarterback would have a bad exchange or whatever. It just seemed like the odds were stacked up against him in the preseason. It was like he just could never get going. So they end up cutting him in 2017. Goes to Baltimore, 973 yards, 6 touchdowns. That was painful.
How about this one? Malik McDowell. That's a good example.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
the fact that he's even playing is a minor miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, could you have had more problems off the field? Or, you know, the accident, first of all and foremost, you know, that looked like, all right, that career's done because of the accident. And then we're, you know, the only time he came up is when we were listening to audio of him in the back of a squad car. You know,
talking about taxes is taxes.
Taxes is taxes. And didn't he wreck the convenience store or whatever? Yeah. And, I mean, that was his claim to fame. There was no idea that he was going to even be back. I don't blame the Seahawks for what he is now. I blame him for taking him. But the fact, if he goes on to have big success with the Browns, I'm not going to go, oh, Seattle should have hung on to him.
Yeah, I mean, they're not blow you away stats, but in 7 games with Cleveland, he's got 3 tackles for loss and a sack and, you know, a handful of tackles, you know, like 12, 15. So, yeah, I mean, but he was just going to have to go somewhere else. That was never going to happen with the Seahawks. So, but man, he goes from the accident on the four-wheeler, the ATV or whatever. And I thought for sure that was, you know, kind of what, when he got in all that trouble and everything, that I thought maybe it was because of the head injury. Like it changed him as a person or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, but now he's back with Cleveland. I mean, God bless him, but I just don't, it's too bad that that had to happen. Because I know they were really high on him, and it was, you know, it was a big deal getting him. They thought they got a steal, and I don't know how much a better player he would be had he not gone through all of that, But yeah, it was just, it was not only the one where he's back in the back of the police car and saying taxes is taxes. That one was, you know, kind of, I mean, that one was amusing to me because he was having the argument with the cop, and then the, and then he says to the cop, what makes you think you can just arrest me? And he's like, well, because we're the police.
Who gave you the authority?
Yeah.
Who are you to arrest me?
What are you talking about? We're the police. But this, but the second one was disturbing.
The convenience store thing.
Convenience store thing was really bad. I mean, you know, and the cops had to wrestle him down, and he was, I mean,
looked bad.
Huge trouble. So
a couple of good ones here. Shin-Soo Chu was a Mariner.
Okay.
Went on to become a stalwart with the Rangers and played with Cleveland. Let's see. There was another one here that caught my David Ortiz. Never really, I mean, he was barely here with the Mariners organization. Then he moved on to Minnesota, and then he went on to Boston. Jones, worst trade ever for them. I don't know. I'd say the Veritek deal was probably the worst one.
Mm.
You traded Derek Lowe and Jason Veritek to the Boston Red Sox for Heathcliff Slocum.
I've heard that name.
It was a really, really poor trade. It didn't work out well, Dave. It worked out well for the Boston Red Sox. Veritek, you know, was their catcher for an eternity and was a team captain and a core piece to their puzzle, whereas Heathcliff, not so much here in Seattle.
Is anybody trying to say that Jamal Adams is part of it or anything like that? Because
just looking for somebody that was here that went on to prominence elsewhere.
Yeah.
Scottie Pippen, technically he was a draft pick but was traded. He never played here.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? Deion Branch. What did he do after he left here? Did he have big years after he left here?
I think, didn't he go back to New England?
Yeah.
I think he went
I'm trying to remember what he did, though.
Yeah.
So text that in. I mean, there weren't a lot of obvious ones. I actually was surprised people didn't say A-Rod.
Did you see Omar Vizquel? That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, but he's not a guy that wasn't good here.
Yeah, he had a much more productive
career
elsewhere.
But he was beloved out here. People loved Omar Vizquel out here, and he was very good out here. Problem is they traded him for Felix Vermeen, who Felix the Cat was not great in that Cleveland deal. So, yeah, send those in. I'm just curious to hear if there's somebody, an obvious one we're missing. But that's frustrating to see players that were once part of your organization go on to success elsewhere.
I mean, it's good news that we're having to, like, ask the texters and kind of, you know, it's sort of a stretch for some of them.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Coming up. Exclusive conversation from Pete Carroll. We play that for you every single week with our very own Steve Rabel. It's coming your way next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.